Mother Earth says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey-o, 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 hey-o. And Father Sky says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me, hey, 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 oh, hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh. And all living creatures say, take good care of us. Please do not hurt us, hey, 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 oh, hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh. We are here to be ourselves, to be with one another, to be with our surroundings, to be, and we are here to take care of ourselves, to take care of one another, to take care of our surroundings. Take care, to care. We are here to love ourselves, to love one another, to love our surroundings. Nahasan aniva nijane go shahotya, nijane go shahotya, hey, 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 yo, hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, 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 yo, hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo.
Akwe, greetings. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat Kiddushi Native American Center. We are broadcasting on RFPI, Radio for Peace International, Global Community Radio. Akwe, welcome. This is your host, Ones Pritzker. Wolf Mountain Radio focuses on protecting Mother Earth, defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Please listen now to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Ho, Kanawatakwasin, to all of our relations.
Hey,
Singer-songwriter Louis Goni from his Canyon Records CD entitled Sacred Mountains, Meditation Songs from the Dene. That particular song was entitled Children of Tomorrow, an honoring song to our future generations, the youth. Ashkwe, greetings and hello everyone. Welcome to Wolf Mountain Native Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. In today's program, we are honored to share a presentation by an international youth leader, Mr. Dumisani Nayoni from Zimbabwe, Africa. Dumisani Nayoni is a youth activist concerned for the future well-being of our planet Earth. Born and raised in Zimbabwe, Africa, Dumisani has a range of experience in promoting youth involvement in important global affairs. These include the environment, sustainable development, eradication of poverty and hunger, peace, and economic social justice. Issues we of Yad Kiddushi Native Center are also very much concerned about. Dumisani Nayoni has been an advisor to many international organizations and projects. He has participated as a youth leader in a number of world conferences. Much of his work is building and coordinating global action networks, facilitating symposiums and youth initiatives. Several examples include his work with the Earth Charter, Echo Ventures International, and Taking IT Global. I had the honor to first meet Dumisani in the spring of 2002 at a wonderful Earth Charter conference. The symposium's theme, Teaching for the Environment in Higher Education, The Promise of the Earth Charter, focused on how the Earth Charter can be an important part of university curricula. This academic forum was more commonly referred to as the Chewunke Symposium, named after the geographic location of the 2002 conference, where Dumasani served as an Earth Charter International Youth Representative. The Earth Charter is a declaration of fundamental principles for building a just, sustainable, and peaceful global society. Four basic concepts of the Earth Charter exemplify the values and principles of global interdependence and shared responsibility for the well-being of all life on Earth. They are respect and care for the community of life, ecological integrity, social and economic justice, and democracy, nonviolence, and peace. We here at Yad Kodesh Native Center express this concern for the biosphere as having reverence for life through Earth ethics. In my native language, we say Kinon Wontakwasin to all of our relations. Most listeners to Wolf Mountain Radio know about the Earth Charter from our longtime coverage and promotion of the Earth Charter through our worldwide broadcasts. They include a five-part series featuring keynote speakers and panel presentations of the Chewunke Conference, my special interview series with internationally recognized educator and Earth Charter scholar Dr. Peter Corcoran, Wolf Mountain Radio interview series with Beatrice Schultes, director of the Earth Charter's Indigenous Peoples Program, Wolf Mountain Radio interview with former Earth Charter Associate Director, ecologist Geraldo Brodowski, our coverage of the first United States Earth Charter Community Summit and nationwide telecast, Wolf Mountain Radio's interview with Earth Charter activists Donna Roberts, Rosie Emery, and Renal Richard, and Wolf Mountain Radio's Earth Charter program, Planetary Vision, that shared my interview with Stephen Rockefeller and focused on UNCED, the UN Conference on Environment and Development, the precursor to the Earth Charter. Wolf Mountain Radio is honored to include this program featuring Dumasani Nayoni as part of our continued promotion of the Earth Charter. Dumasani Nayoni's presentation was hosted by Florida Gulf Coast University's Center for Environmental and Sustainability Education. His presentation, quote, Environmental Challenges, Local Activism, and Global Affairs, unquote, was one of the center's Rachel Carson Distinguished Lecture Series program. Dumasani visited the campus as part of FGCU's celebration of National Environmental Education Week, co-sponsored by the University Environment Club and the Power of One student organization. I have had the privilege to serve as a member of Florida Gulf Coast University's Center for Environment and Sustainability Education's Board of Advisors, which I was appointed to by FGCU President Dr. Bill Merrin. Under the leadership of my dear friends and colleagues, Center Director Dr. Peter Corcoran and Associate Director Dr. Jim Walpart, the FGCU Center works towards its mission of realizing a sustainable and peaceful future through scholarship, education, and action. One signature event of the Center for Environmental and Sustainability Education is the Rachel Carson Distinguished Lecture Series. Rachel Carson, the famed biologist, writer, and activist, is the inspiration of our center's work. Rachel Carson's contribution to human understanding of our environment is unparalleled. She exemplified environmental activism through promoting public policies based on sound science and ethics. Rachel Carson's writings encouraged me to become an ecologist and earth justice activist. On radio is very proud to continue now with part two of Dumasani Nayoni's lecture at Florida Gulf Coast University in April 2005, his presentation entitled Environmental Challenges, Local Activism, and Global Affairs, where he continues his comments on issues such as world population, issues of global consumption of energy, natural resources, and food, the impact of human development and growth on the planet, and of course the disparity between economic and social justice between the industrialized North countries and the so-called third world less developed countries, something that we at Yad Kodesh Native Center are also very much concerned about. So please listen now to Mr. Dumasani Nayoni as he continues his lecture at FGCU, April 2005.
How do we create livelihoods for people, so people have a way to feed themselves, feed their loved ones, and do so the next year, and the year after, and the year after, and that those that come after us can also have a livelihood? How do we figure out the environmental challenges? How do we protect the environment? How do we rehabilitate the parts of the world we've messed up? And how do we conserve and preserve the great parts that we still have? So these are all amazing challenges that we need to figure out, I think, as a global community, as a global problem that faces all of us, regardless of where we're from. How do we do it? How do we deal with all of these things that we've just seen, those numbers, those statistics, those economic principles? So, we do have a clear challenge to eradicate poverty. You know, when you see eradicating poverty as an ethical and a social and an environmental imperative, we do. That is a challenge that all of us really have. It's not just President Bush's challenge. I don't know if he sees it the same way. And it's not just Nelson Mandela's challenge or Mahatma Gandhi's challenge when he was still around. It's a shared concern I think we do have. How do we eradicate poverty? And furthermore, how do we ensure that the economic activities and the institutions that we build, that they, at all levels, be it the World Trade Organization or my bakery down the street, how do they promote human development that's equitable and also in a sustainable manner? These are an unbelievable challenge. I don't claim to have the answer, but I hope to create a dialogue with people that helps us all to see how we can meet and respond to those challenges. Consumption is increasing, and we need to figure out if there's ways we can stem it or change the way we consume. There's a challenge in how do we then legislate and create policy that helps to meet those needs, that helps to respond to those challenges. I think some of it is within our means. We can create laws and policies and frameworks that change the way we behave and the way we do business. And globalization is then adding more confusion into the whole mix, because you have shifting cultures. Now it's not just your culture's problem and your people's problem, because your people and your culture are now my neighbors. Literally and practically, if I can be sitting here talking to you and someone calls me from Zimbabwe to ask me if I saw the Red Sox beat the Yankees, that's crazy, right? Zimbabwe is worried about the Yankees and the Red Sox, but if it happens, I have friends in Zimbabwe who know I live in Boston, and they say, when you come home, can you bring me a Boston Red Sox cap? I'm a Red Sox fan. So how do we then deal with all of those challenges in a world that doesn't know the same boundaries? I showed you a picture of Zimbabwe and the countries around me, and in the countries around my country too, that doesn't count for much anymore. The problems and the opportunities are universal and they're global, right? And they're constantly shifting, the needs are constantly shifting. It's not just that Chinese people need rice in China. Chinese people have Chinatowns where they're feeding everyone else as well. Therefore, how does that all come together? And these problems are interconnected, right? September 11 is one problem, but it didn't just affect white, rich, affluent American men, right? People from over 100 countries died in those buildings. People the world over paying the price and feeling the repercussions of that shock. In the same way, hunger affecting the Sudan is not just a Sudanese problem. How do we then change and shift the way we see these global problems? Can we meet these challenges without causing harm and causing destruction to each other? Have the wars for oil, wars for diamonds, wars for gold, wars for anything else we're fighting over? Have they brought us the results we've expected? And what will wars for water and air in the future, and for trees and for land, what will they bring? This is one of the saddest pictures I've ever seen. This is a father in Iraq. He's going to bury his two sons, his only two children that were killed. He doesn't understand why on earth they died. So if I go up to him on the other side of the slide and say, man, I'm sorry, the children are dead, you have to go and bury them. And they died because we're trying to fight terrorism. I don't think it'll compute in his mind. He'll look at me and say, my kids died for your terrorism? How does that work? Or if I say they died because you got all resources I think we need so that my 2.5 gallons a day isn't great. He's going to look at me and say, oh, okay, I understand. Well, I'm glad they died for a good cause. Let me go bury my son. I don't think that'll work. That's one example. And we can find countless other examples of therefore how are the ways we're living and operating affecting other people in real terms. It's not an intelligent argument, and it's not something that is published in a magazine to make money or to sell copies. It's real for some people. And it's real for us too, living in comfortable air-conditioned university campuses. So I think that there are some clear shifts that need to take place. How do we think about these issues? We need to shift in how we think about the things we do on an everyday basis. It's hard. I study psychology, and one of the things that I have learned from studying psychology is, hey, there's a lot of people with weird ideas, whether their names are Freud or Jung, they're crazy. But they're fun to look at and study. B is that psychology is the study of human behavior. Changing human behavior is the hardest thing ever. People can climb Everest up and down, but people can't quit smoking. People can swim the English Channel, people can't swim smoking. As a behavioral. People can, one man last year ran 7 marathons in 7 days on 7 continents. It's the human body doing it. That's insane. I can't even say one marathon, he ran 7. But people can't quit smoking. So changing human behavior is fundamentally difficult. But how do you create those shifts? Because we need to create those shifts. But when you have a train coming for you, head first, changing your behavior about where you're standing is not difficult. You shift. And you let the train go by. If you're stupid and hard-headed and think you can take the train on, you stay. Good luck to you. So we have a train coming for us as a planet, given the numbers and given the pressures of the world we live in. How do we shift where we're standing to avoid that train wreck? Because we're not going to win. It's impossible to win against something that big. So behavior is something that really needs to change. The entire world. And so people have spent hundreds of years trying to understand how do you change human behavior. And I think we need to also reflect and think about how do we change our own behavior. I'm going to take you on a little bit an excursion to Africa. To have a look at Africa as an example. Right? So let's consider that what I said before, the assets of the world's 3 richest people exceed the combined GDPs of the world's 48 poorest countries. A lot of those countries are in Africa. Now, let's also consider that the 15 richest people, so if we take Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, and 13 other people and line them up, they have more wealth than the whole of sub-Saharan Africa. If you go from where the Sahara Desert roughly ends to the very bottom, all of those countries have less money than the 15 richest people in the world. Less money and assets, cash, you name it. Their value, fiscally, financially, economically, is less than the 15 richest people in the world. That's the part of the world I come from. That's the challenges that we are facing. We're trying to make it happen. We're trying to survive and see the next day without even the same resources that 15 people who probably all call each other and say, how are you doing? Happy birthday, happy. So that's more than 600 million people have less resources than 15. The paradox is that Africa has. I love Africa. It's the most unbelievable place. And in a couple of years, I'll be living there again. Just so when you come in on safari, you can stop by and we'll drink tea. And, I'll take you to places that the tour guides won't take. But Africa has many paradoxes. It has over 2,000 different languages that are spoken on the continent. That's a lot of things. There's people from almost every race and color and creed that live on the continent. There's a lot of wealth in Africa. There's some people in Africa that are as rich as anybody in the United States. And then there's a majority of people that are very poor. So it has all these complications. But as a whole, it's probably the poorest, it's the richest continent in terms of mineral wealth. We have more gold, more platinum, more diamonds, more natural resources such as timber and wood combined in one place than anyone else in the world. But in having all of that wealth, we still continue to have the greatest poverty. How that happens, it doesn't make sense to me. I don't understand it. I can't figure out how that can be the case. And I think that historically, the global system has benefited from sucking resources out of Africa. Right? Remember that picture I showed when everybody's trying to get a piece of it? So somebody came to Africa and got a piece of it and said, that's going to sustain and maintain some of our economic activity. And I'm sure it's the same for other parts of the world. And it's the same even within those same countries. So this global system has then been maintained and subsidized by a poor Africa at the expense of African peoples. It's as if you have this huge tank called the global economy, and all these pipes are coming out of it, but they all go out, and very few, if any at all, go back in. And at the end, you then have a pretty empty tank that's not going to sustain anybody who lives in it or anyone else who's connected to that tank. So we have issues of corruption and governance. I agree those are very much responsible for the plight and the poverty of those people. But I don't think that that's the only case. People always talk as if that's the only thing that's causing Africa's issues. But I think we do need to have critical shifts in how the world even relates to Africa. Is Africa our tuck shop, where we just go and we're hungry and we just purchase the resources we need, and the human resources we need, and the natural resources we need, and live happily ever after? Or do we need to change in the way we see that? In the last century, people in Africa fought for their political independence, from apartheid, from colonialism, from oppression, and for the most part, they achieved that. And now you have African people running their countries, and running their businesses, and running their institutions, and they're trying to learn how that happens. Because a lot of the way they did things were destroyed, and they're learning new systems to manage themselves. But I don't think they have economic independence, because a lot of those resources are still owned by the people who connect those pipes outwards. So you can't have a sustainable development of the African continent. And I tell the African story because I think that's what most of the world is based on, that model, is based on that formula, which if we don't change and if we don't shift, the end result cannot, we've seen it, the end result cannot be anything happy and cannot be anything prosperous or good for the planet. The challenges are global, but I think that the fundamental shift will always be local. How do you change a global behavior? What does that mean? I think the best you can do is change a series of local behaviors. And how we do that is pretty much the focus of the second part of the presentation. Looking at how do we then create a new way of being together on the planet. There's 6 billion of us. We can't be and interact and connect in the same way we've done for the past hundreds of years, because that hasn't worked for the majority of people. We need to create a new global dialogue that's connected by local conversations. I think dialogue doesn't have to be the same people in the same room, but how do we have a global dialogue about all of those questions that have been raised and all of the challenges that are obvious to us? So we need to figure out a new way to talk to each other about those common challenges. How important are these issues to you as an individual? They're important to me. It doesn't mean I always do everything I can about them, but they're important. If you ask the people in Africa who are affected by oil in Asia, or ask the people in the United States and other parts of the country, or ask the Native Americans who used to live on this land, ask them how important these issues are to them. Ask that father in Iraq who buried his son 2 years ago because a bomb hit him. Ask them how important it is to figure out how to be together in a new way on this planet that doesn't lead to destruction. And how willing are you to invite or engage others in this dialogue? It's not easy to always go to people and talk to them about things that aren't the latest TV show, or that it's hard. People think you're a weirdo sometimes. Why do you spend your time talking about trees? You know, for oil. Are you crazy? There's other things to talk about. You know, if you're young and in your mid-20s and male, there's a stereotype about how you're supposed to behave. But how much are we willing to step outside of those things? How much are we willing to create spaces where we can talk and be in a conversation and deepen our understanding of the issues that we face and the issues that affect us? So I think that global, when we talk about global affairs, I think global is just a sum of many things that are local. That's what defines global. I don't think there is a thing that's out there that you can point your finger and say, that's global. This is local, we're in the same place, but we're part of a global dialogue, we're part of a global existence. We breathe the same air that they breathe in Tanzania, we're part of a global connection. And so understanding that can help to see how our local action, our local participation, and our local involvement, and our local activism is connected with the global questions and challenges that we face. And I think we can each make a contribution to think about what defines global. If global is the sum of many things local, we can then contribute in our local space to redefining and reshaping that which is called global. So I think that, at least for me, I have a lifelong research question. What's my contribution to the global picture? Right? Everybody has a thesis, and you write this thesis. How does water affect ABC in this part of the environment? Or your research question can be how the atoms behave under certain pressure and heat. For me, I have a lifelong research question, which I try and learn about every day. What's my contribution to the global picture? You know, in some ways, a very local contribution can be through local environmental policies that local governments and local institutions run and execute. Campus consumption can be one that can be a practical contribution for people who live or work or interact in the university campus. How does that relate to all the other things that we spoke about? How do we understand what to consume at the campus? How we can shift that consumption pattern, how we can create dialogues and conversations around our campus about those important things. How do we identify with what they are? And are we willing to make the sacrifices and go out of our comfort zone to do those things? And where do the goods and products we consume come from? A lot of the time, we wake up every day, take a shower, comb our hair, run to school, throw down our lunch, in the evening we do other things, and the days just seem to go by. We don't really stop and figure out where do the things that we consume and eat and use, where do they all come from? And you know, a lot of them come from Africa. I didn't mean to say that, I'm African, what else could I say? Right? So a lot of them also come from, you know, South America, a lot of them come from here in the United States, but it's important to understand where they come from. Because then you can understand how your consumption of those goods affects people on the other side of that consumption pattern. And some people may say, well, why should I care? Why should I care about where the things I consume come from? Why should I care about what my contribution is on a global scale? Why should I matter? That's someone else's job. Right? I'm an economics major, I study political science, or I'm a shrink in the making. Why should I care about the environment? There's environmentalists figuring that out, right? Well, as a psychologist, I think, and talking to animal psychologists, people who study the behavior of animals, they say the biggest difference between animals and human beings is empathy. Human beings have the ability to empathize and to put themselves in the place of another human being. The difference between us as human beings and chimpanzees in our DNA is tiny. 2.8% of our DNA is different. But that 2.8% carries things that chimpanzees probably don't have. They're still studying and figuring out. I don't think chimpanzees have empathy in the way human beings can. So we have the ability to exercise empathy. When we ignore it, I think we do really crazy things. So why should you care? Well, empathize it for a moment. Imagination. Human beings can imagine. We can't figure out if animals have imagination or not. Right? Close your eyes for a second. Everyone, close your eyes. And think about being on a tropical island. I don't know what that looks like to you. And there's a palm tree and there's coconut trees hanging down and there's people running around with flowers around their necks and the sun is setting over the ocean in the horizon, white sand, blue water. Can you see it? Right. That's the power of imagination. Keep your eyes closed. Think about somebody in the Democratic Republic of the Congo who's been working for 3 years straight because their village was destroyed in some civil war and they're trying to go and find a place to live. 20,000 people are working in a big land with boxes on their head, that's all they own. Kids are hungry, they're tired of working, their legs are painful, and they're holding their mum's skirt to lift them. Can you imagine that? I don't know what it looks like to each and every one of us, but he has the power to imagine. I know this. So everybody has the power to imagine. You can empathize. Right? If I'm standing right here, right now, and Graham stands up and smacks me, everyone goes, oh! Because for a moment, you just connected with what I potentially saw. You didn't feel it, but it had an effect on you. So why should I care about what's happening in another part of the world? Why should I care about how my local actions and my local behavior and my local lifestyle affect what's happening on the other side of the world? Well, it's what makes you human. If you can't do that, if you can't empathize and imagine somewhere else, you're lacking 2% of your DNA. You're not a human being. So if you're a human being, you have the ability to do that. Use it. So imagination is very important. Einstein says imagination is more important than knowledge. So you know what's here. Can you imagine what's not here? Can you imagine what someone else's experience is? It doesn't mean you have to get it right, but if you have a tool of imagination, what does it mean to you? You can imagine what's happened to people in the past and historically. I wasn't there when slavery was killing my people. And I was on the line when my country was under colonialism, I was born in independence as well. But I can imagine. And I can hear the stories of what it did to people. So imagine for a second other people's realities and what they go through. And given the world we live in, and given some of the statistics and the numbers and the models and the figures and the scenarios we painted earlier, imagine what it's like to have that as your workspace, right? They're smiling, they're happy, so it seems, but that's a sweatshop. They're probably making jeans that we buy at the Gap, or they're probably making jeans we buy at Levi's Charles or Tommy Hilfiger or at Macy's, right? But imagine being in there. We can see it, but this is work. You wake up every morning and you're going to work. There's no air conditioning, there's no highways, there's no drive-through Starbucks to give you an early morning shot of coffee. There's none of that exists. You have those cell phones to sort of call and check in. You don't drop off your kids to work and say, mommy will see you when they pick you up later, or daddy will come watch you at the baseball game. Empathize with what this means. Why do they have to work in these conditions? What are they feeding? Unlimited wants and unlimited needs? Can I not limit my wants enough to avoid having that happen? Well, but you're creating jobs for this. Can I not create jobs that are more humane and more realistic? So, if we as human beings can imagine and empathize with what is happening in other parts of the world, we can understand the impact of our local actions. Kids are supposed to grow up playing, right? Again, I study psychology, and child psychology says when kids are young, let them play. Let them develop their senses of imagination. Let them develop their senses of being human beings. Let them play and be creative and imagine. Let them learn about empathy. If I break your sandcastle, how does that affect you? Oh no, he's not happy, but I broke it. But we're developing their senses of empathy. That's how human beings are supposed to develop. And most of us in this room, we've probably got the chances to play when we were kids, one way or the other. But there's kids in other parts of the world who spend their day making shoes that you and I wear or buy. So imagine being in that kid's situation. What is it about us as human beings that's driving us to do this to yourself?
What's the matter with us? We're so comfortable, cozy. What's the matter with us? We're so daydreaming, dozy. Why are we polluting our children? There's no future in that. Why put food in our poison? There's no future in that. Why do away with our woodlands? Nothing can be gained from that. Why waste the best of our farmland? Where's the logic in that? What's the matter with us? Oh, what's the matter with us? Why be warring each other? There's so much music to know. Why be fighting each other? So much good food to enjoy. Why so afraid of another? So many countries to know. Why so afraid of living when there's so much loving to do? What's the matter with us? I'm asking, do you know what's the matter with us?
Ha ha ha! listening to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat-Kidichi Native Center. Yat-Kidichi Native Center defends Mother Earth and the cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Yat-Kidichi Native Center is an intertribal culture and arts, environmental protection, social justice, and news media organization. Yat-Kidichi Native Center portrays Native peoples and their worldviews in a more accurate and in-depth depiction of both our ancestral and contemporary cultures. Yat-Kidichi Native Center serves to educate by providing a deeper understanding of our diverse cultures, arts, values, histories, and contemporary situations. Yat-Kidichi tries to honor traditional ways by instilling an appreciation and respect for Mother Earth and tribal peoples throughout the world. Yat-Kidichi Native Center educates the public on important issues facing Indigenous communities. We work in support of intertribal, cultural, environmental, and social justice issues by networking with other organizations and events which share our concern. Yat-Kidichi Native Center serves as a focal point for Native news and information. We maintain a documentary library for networking with the Native and international press. Yat-Kidichi Native Center's Speakers Bureau provides spokespersons for school programs, conference speakers, and community presentations. Yat-Kidichi Native Center is experienced in planning, promoting Native forums, symposiums, powwows, and cultural events. Yat-Kidichi's Mishkwinataki Environment Program protects Mother Earth through conservation and restoration projects. Yat-Kidichi's Environmental Education Program focuses on curriculum development, teacher training, and nature field trips. We are members of the professional organization, the North American Association of Environmental Education. Yat-Kidichi's Kinonwatakusi Native Arts creates quality handcrafted traditional and contemporary fine arts. Please request our catalog of custom flutes, pottery, beaded necklaces, bracelets, earrings, leather pouches, hat bands, and chokers with bone. Yat-Kidichi Native Center's Wolf Mountain Radio Program, Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, honors Native American and Indigenous peoples throughout the world by being a voice for our ancestors, contemporary, and future generations. Native peoples throughout the world are concerned for the well-being of sacred Mother Earth, tribal sovereignty, and respect for cultural lifeways. If you appreciate hearing Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, we ask you, our listeners, to help financially support our program to stay on the air. Wolf Mountain Radio is an all-volunteer production. Any financial contribution to Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices will be greatly appreciated. We thank you for listening to Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices. We welcome your comments and suggestions. Please feel free to contact us about our consulting services, or if you or your organization is interested in hosting a speaker or educational forum. To contact Yat-Kidichi Native Center, write to Yat-Kidichi Native Center, 1731 16th Avenue Northeast, Naples, Florida, 34120, USA.
watch the rape of the world. It's the beginning of the end. It's the most heinous of crimes. It's the deadliest of sins. Place of our birth.
From singer-songwriter Tracy Chapman from her CD, New Beginning. Of course, that song was entitled Rape of the World. And I really appreciate Tracy Chapman's songs for many years. I've had the honor to know her, especially when Wolf Mountain Native Radio used to broadcast out of Boston, Massachusetts on WMFO FM 91.5. And during those years, Tracy Chapman many times came to our studio and shared some of her folk music and participated in a number of Native American benefit concerts and events that our program helped co-sponsor. Prior to our Yacht Kiddushin Native Center program identification, we featured a Native American drum song from the drum White Lodge. That song was entitled White Bear Special. And we started off our music set with environmental singer-songwriter Rafi with his reggae tune entitled What's the Matter with Us. Well, dear friends, we're nearing the end of our broadcast time together for this edition of Wolf Mountain Native Radio. I hope you really appreciated the presentation of Dumasani Nayoni at Florida Gulf Coast University this April 2005. His presentation was entitled Environmental Challenges, Local Activism, and Global Affairs. And this is a subject, of course, that we at Yad Kiddushin Native Center are very much involved with. I want to share with you a essay I wrote some 28 years ago when I had the honor to be a representative of the U.S. Peace Corps at the World Food Conference. This is my statement there, quote, "As the world enters the last quarter of the 20th century, let us consider the future well-being of our planet. Facing the world community will be increasing population, natural resources scarcity, food shortages, environmental degradation, and economic disparities. By the year 2000, with the Earth's carrying capacity, the ability of ecological systems to sustain the multitudes of people will be able to support a quality of life. As we ponder on the future, let us remember that there can be no real peace in the world so long as almost a billion people live in the helplessness of absolute poverty. There can be no enduring stability so long as so many nations remain dangerously vulnerable to economic uncertainty. There can be no meaningful security so long as the poorer countries remain unable to meet the development aspirations of their people. The most compelling of our challenges remains the plight of the world's poorest people, almost a billion of whom live on the borderline of human existence. This is unacceptable and intolerable to the world conscience. We must ensure that the poor have access to the most fundamental of human requirements, food, shelter, health care, clean water, fertile soil, forests, jobs and livelihood, and education, things which all humans have a right to expect. We must recognize our international responsibility as citizens sharing our precious planet Earth. In closing, let me present Declaration 2 of the United Nations Declaration on the Environment, which I heard as an observer at the UN Stockholm Environment Conference, June 1972. Quote, "The protection and improvement of the human environment is a major issue which affects the well-being of peoples and economic development throughout the world. It is the urgent desire of the peoples of the whole world and the duty of all governments," unquote. Humankind must become more aware of the endangered state of our biosphere, unquote. Honest A. Pritzker, U.S. Peace Corps volunteer. Well, dear friends, we're going to conclude today's program with a song by John Lennon from his CD, The Very Best of John Lennon. And, of course, this song needs little introduction from us. It is entitled Imagine. Until the next Wolf Mountain Native Radio, this is your host and producer, Honest Pritzker, thanking you for listening to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Aho, Kinon One Takwasin, to all of our relations.
See if you try.